The final region, the South region, as we wrap up the Amateur Hour podcast March Madness preview. I'm Brian Gibberman. I think I said my name right that time. Here with Sam Vecini from CBSSports.com. And now we reach the evil place where Duke is.
I just don't understand why you hate Duke.
I'm a Michigan fan. I grew up in the 90s. Of course I hate Duke.
Just gotta embrace it.
No, never. Did you like the I Hate Christian Laettner 30 for 30? Did you get a chance to watch it?
Did not even get... I could have watched it, but I chose the Jinx instead.
What is this, the Jinx show? I haven't watched any of it.
It's one of the best things I've seen on TV in the last, like, 3 years, I would say.
Give me a overview.
So it's a documentary about this guy... who is the son of Seymour Durst, who is the patriarch, or I guess was, because he's dead now, and the other son runs it. One of the five, like, richest families in New York. They do real estate. So this guy that, like, Seymour Durst's son, Robert, he's been connected with three separate murders throughout, like, the last 30 years. One of them was his wife's disappearance, who they assume is dead. One of them is one of his best friends from college. And then another one is this guy that he killed and dismembered. They said that he got off for that one because they said he killed him in self-defense and then just freaked out about, like, being caught up in another murder and then dismembered him and tried to throw him in the river. So it's about this guy, like, telling his story about the murders. And in the news this weekend, they just arrested him again in connection with one of the murders they talk about in the show.
Okay, I'm going to have to watch. That does sound interesting. I'm going to have to watch that. Another thing.
It's terrific. It's one of the best shows I've seen in a long time.
Another thing that's interesting is the NCAA tournament, and we should probably keep talking about that.
I could talk for hours about the Jinx. I'm enjoying it thoroughly.
I've seen a lot of people tweeting about that, but I haven't. I didn't start it, so that I'll have to use my HBO Go on that. All right. My dream. Now, this is where I'm split. I got my boy Steve Fisher going up against St. John's. And I'm not a St. John's fan, but I like to see St. John's do well. I know people who are St. John's fans growing up in New York. But so I'm upset that those two teams are playing each other. And my most happiest moment, I don't know if that's correct English, but it would be my most happiest moment in the tournament if Steve Fisher got to beat Duke in the NCAA tournament. I would absolutely love that.
That would be pretty cool. I think that San Diego State's going to get past St. John's rather easily. I don't know if you heard yesterday, but Chris Obekpa, who is St. John's center, he's really their only big man. He's going to be out for the tournament, basically. He was suspended for conduct detrimental. So that's not good whenever your only big man is going to be out and you're facing San Diego State, who has a plethora of guys 6'10" or taller, 6'9" or taller. So I think San Diego State's going to roll pretty easily, and they're probably going to face Duke, assuming that Duke beats Bobby Moe.
And it sounds like San Diego State would be a pretty good matchup for Duke.
Yes, on defense. I think that they do a really good job against Okafor, because they'd be able to throw Skylar Spencer on him, they'd be able to throw Angelo Chola on him, and maybe hold him at bay in the post, and then they do all kind of different, like, helping stuff to try and slow him down. But they're not going to be able to score enough to stay in that game, I don't think.
Damn it. I have better news.
I'm sorry. I don't think they're going to score enough to play in that game.
This is another reason I stopped doing brackets. I pick you, Duke is always like a one or two seed, and I would pick them to lose into the second round every year.
Didn't work out well for
you. No, typically. I get lucky every once in a while, but yeah, typically no.
Yeah, Michael Krzyzewski is a pretty good coach.
I don't really acknowledge that, but yeah, he might be. is Iowa State better than Gonzaga?
It might be. I think Gonzaga is a more complete team. They're a better defensive team, and I think they're reasonably close on offense to what Iowa State can do. So I would pick Gonzaga to beat Iowa State. But it's close, and I can see an argument for why someone would pick Iowa State, because they'd just say Iowa State's going to get out and run, and Gonzaga would probably have to play Sabonis most of the game instead of Karnowski, and Karnowski actually does a pretty decent amount for their ball movement. So that would be it would be an interesting matchup if that happens. I would default to Gonzaga, though.
You mentioned it in one of the earlier three regions we discussed. I forget which one. Georgetown's a very overvalued four.
Yes, I think that they're like a six, masquerading as a four.
Duke, this is why I don't like Duke. They always get hooked up.
Yeah, they definitely got hooked up in this region because Utah has lost four of their last seven. St. John's has lost their center. UCLA made the tournament miraculously. Iowa's been okay down the stretch, but they lost their first tournament game. Davidson's good. Davidson's really good, actually, as a 10, but they probably won't ever see them. And then Gonzaga's a top 8 team in the country, so I wouldn't say that that's a weak one. And Iowa State isn't weak, but the top half of their region, I think, is extremely weak.
Oh, such a coincidence. Duke always gets an easy look.
Yeah, like, I would be very surprised if we look up and Duke isn't in the Elite Eight. Put it this way, in my bracket right now, I have, that's my 12-13 game, where I have both upsets happening in the 4-5 games. So I have Stephen F. Austin against Eastern Washington. So unless San Diego State beats Duke, Duke's having a matchup against Stephen F. Austin and Eastern Washington. For me right now.
And that's the type of team Duke will just murder.
Yeah, because neither of them have the size to match up with Okafor.
All right, so the bottom half you find a little bit more intriguing?
Bottom half's actually a pretty strong little pod there, I think, or pair of pods. You have UCLA against SMU. UCLA is, yeah, they probably shouldn't have gotten into the tournament. Their resume was kind of a joke compared to some of the other teams that got left out, like Colorado State. But they're undeniably a better team. They're probably, I have them beating SMU. I wouldn't say it's a probable beat, because SMU is really good, but they can absolutely beat SMU. Bryce Alford and Nick Moore, that matchup's going to be fun. Norman Powell is better than any of SMU's wings, like, by a long shot. And then you have Kevon Looney going up against some of the bigger guys inside for SMU, like Yannick Moreira and Marcus Kennedy. And that's going to be a terrific matchup. So I probably default to UCLA a little bit, and that's probably just me having seen UCLA a lot over the past, like, 3 weeks and seeing them play well recently. The key for them is going to be Tony Parker, whether or not he shows up in that game. If he shows up in that game against their front court, UCLA will win. And then you got Iowa State sitting there next. Iowa State will get through UAB rather easily, I think. And then they're going to be facing UCLA or maybe SMU. And that's not an easy matchup necessarily for Iowa State either, because both of those teams are better than Iowa State on the interior. Like, Jameel McKay is good. He's not great. He's more of like he gets out and runs with guys and he blocks the occasional shot. He's an athlete more than he's like a good post presence. SMU and UCLA both have good post presences that will demand the ball and will be able to score against Iowa State inside. So that's going to be a problem for them. I think Iowa State would still beat both of those teams because they'd get out and run. But it would be intriguing, at least, I think, to see those. And then Iowa-Davidson is one of the most fun games of the first round. That's going to be like first to 85 wins. So anytime those games happen is one of my favorites because I like up-tempo basketball. I either like up-tempo basketball or really slow, efficient basketball.
Yeah, so you have no middle ground.
Yeah, no, that's often the way I like am in life too. Like, there's no real middle ground for me. I really like teams that get out and run and teams that jack up a lot of threes, and Davidson does that. And so does Iowa. Iowa tries to play up tempo, but they are more of an inside base team with Aaron White and Adam Woodbury and Gabe Olushanie and Jared Utoff. So I think the Davidson guards will probably be a little bit too much for Mike Gazelle and whoever the hell they start, Josh Oglesby, Peter Joke, like whoever. So I picked Davidson in that game. Then you've got Gonzaga lurking, and Gonzaga's good. So
it sounds like our two most fun games from the first weekend, Iowa-Davidson, and potentially, if it happens, Arkansas-North Carolina.
Well, Iowa-Davidson is a first-round game. Arkansas-North Carolina is a second-round game.
Yeah, that's why I said potentially Arkansas-North Carolina. Kind of like the games with the pace that could happen with the pace, the high scoring.
Oh, yeah.
Those would be the two games that are easiest on the eyes if the second one ends up happening.
Another one could be Maryland-West Virginia. Both those teams play reasonably fast. BYU Xavier would be a pretty fast game. I think that Ohio State VCU is probably going to be a reasonably up tempo game too.
Okay. So those are, if you're looking for high scoring, up and down, those are the games to target on your TV to kind of carve out some time and watch. What makes this Davidson team good? I mean, the last time we really saw them go deep, it was Steph Curry. Obviously a different team right now. If they were going to go on a run, why would they be able to do something like that?
They utilize the three-point line better than any team in the country. They're shooting 39% from three as a team, and 46% of their attempts are from three-point range. Like, almost half of their shots are from three-point range. That's outrageous.
That's amazing.
It's awesome. They never turn the ball over. Like, they're second to Wisconsin in the country in turnover percentage. And they have the eighth best offensive efficiency in the country, according to KenPom. So they're a terrific team to watch. I enjoy them immensely.
Why is Utah dipped off?
Defense. In four or five of their last seven games, four of which they've lost, they've given up over a point per possession in those games. Whenever their season-long average adjusted defensive efficiency is like 90. So it's like 0.9 points per possession. So they're giving up almost a full tenth of a point per possession or greater over the last seven games. And this is a team that outside of DeLon Wright doesn't really have a lot of ways to create offense. Jakob Poeltl can't create offense in the post for himself. Brandon Taylor's a spot-up shooter. Jordan Loveridge is a guy who tries to create but isn't really good at it. He's more of a spot-up guy. Zachary Tucker's more of a spot-up guy. So if you can find a way to neutralize DeLon Wright, you can find a way to neutralize Utah. And with the way that Utah's defense has been playing, I've actually picked Stephen F. Austin in this game to win because Stephen F. Austin is an incredible offensive team. In non-adjusted offensive efficiency this year, they're in the top 10 in the country. Their two best players right now, their true shooting percentages are 64% and 66%.
That's not bad.
That's not bad. That's not human either. but not bad.
Wow. Draft prospect-wise, this, outside of Duke, it's kind of lacking a little bit?
Yeah, I would think that's fair. You have Looney, you have DeLon Wright, a lot of people like Isaac Copeland from Georgetown. Chris Obekpo would have been an interesting one. He probably would have been one of the guys that I would have said he has a lot to gain from this region. Aaron White's like a second-round guy. Niang's a second-round guy. Jameel McKay is probably a second-round guy from Iowa State. And then Gonzaga has Wilcher, Gonzaga has Kevin Pangos, Gary Bell. All of those guys will probably be in summer league eventually, but they probably won't be draft picks necessarily. I can see a change. I would say that Wilcher is a guy who has a lot to gain because his shooting is incredible from all over floor. There's literally not a spot on the floor where he can't get it done. So if he can find a way to really have a breakout tournament, even though he's had a breakout year already, if he can have a breakout tournament, he'd start to get on draft boards, I think.
So this isn't a sexy bracket for NBA stuff, but there are a bunch of guys who could be in the mix, sounds like. It's the best way to put it. So the only four, you had Winslow, Tyus Jones, and Okafor from Duke, DeLon Wright, Looney.
Pirtle, too.
Pirtle.
Utah. I'm not as high on Pirtle, though.
So. Those are probably the only guys we're talking about here that are in the first round mix.
Norman Powell, probably, too.
Okay.
Have an outside shot at the first. Sabonis, Domantas Sabonis from Gonzaga, too. I almost forgot about him. He'll probably be a first-round pick eventually.
He comes off the bench right now, though, right?
He does, but he plays like 28 minutes a game.
Okay, so it's
like
just...
He plays a lot.
It's just in one of those things where that's just the role they've carved out for him.
They're like a 7-deep team, and he plays a lot.
What game do you want to see the most? Not first round. You've already Iowa Davidson, you made clear, for the region as a whole.
Region as a whole. I would like to see Gonzaga, Iowa State, just because, like I said, I think that's an interesting matchup of styles. Gonzaga's a really good interior team. They'd be able to pound Iowa State inside. Iowa State would try and get out and outrun Gonzaga, so that would be intriguing to me. Duke against Iowa State would also be pretty fun. And Duke against Gonzaga would also be really fun. But Duke against Iowa State, I think Iowa State would just try and let them... They would let Okafor go nuts. They would let them have like 30 and 15, like Notre Dame did earlier, and just try and shut down everyone else and try and outscore them from there. And that would be an interesting strategy, I think, because I'm surprised that worked for Notre Dame. And then Gonzaga, you have the big guys that can bang with Okafor. Like, you have Karnowski, you have Sabonis, you have... Wiltshire can't really bang with them, but it's fine. You have two guys that can really, really at least try to impede Okafor a little bit, and if you double down, that can create some interesting offense. Plus, Gonzaga is incredible offensively, too. So there are a lot of potential intriguing matchups. There are a lot of pitfalls that could befall them there. Before they get to Duke, though. But Duke, I think, is a pretty safe Elite Eight bet.
Is there a coach you see in this region that would go to a heavy Okafor fouling strategy?
That's a good question. Brad Underwood's really smart at Stephen F. Austin. Like, I think the team should do it, honestly. His free throw stroke looks so much worse than it did earlier this year. He looks like he's totally lost confidence.
There got to a point when there was a stretch. I remember we talked about it. There was a stretch in the middle of the season where he had to be in the low to mid 60s for a good chunk of games.
Yeah.
And it's just gone completely off the charts.
Plummeted. It's a mess. I would absolutely start fouling. I would start hackaforing or whatever you want to call it. I can see Brad Underwood doing it maybe. I can see Hoiberg doing it, too. Hoiberg's a sharp guy, and he knows that if Iowa State would be trading, like, 1 point for 3 points, that would be a good trade-off for him. I don't know that Mark Few would do it, though, for Gonzaga. So, do you have any idea if you think Fisher would do it at San Diego State?
I haven't watched Fisher closely in a really, really long time. I'd just be making up an answer and spewing BS if I said something.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. Like, all of this is speculation at this point because no one's done it yet.
Yeah, and
I can't remember the last time we saw a team just hack a guy and send him to the line.
And I'm with you. They really should do it at this point with him. There's no reason not to. It's a smart way to go against Duke, the way they can score the basketball.
Yeah, like, they would keep him in the game, or maybe they wouldn't keep him in the game. Like, maybe they would just decide, hey, we can score efficiently. If he's only going to give us 1 point per possession, we can outdo that with playing Plumlee and just surrounding him with shooters. You know what I mean? Like, I could see a circumstance where they sit Okafor at that point if you're going to start fouling him. And it would be stupid, but you need him to start making, you need to start making shots at some point. You need to start making free throws, and maybe he'd get into a rhythm and he would start making them, and then you'd play out right. But there's no reason to not try this, at least.
So you said you had 3-2s and a 1. You have Gonzaga beating Duke.
I do, and it's just because I had Gonzaga in the Final Four to start the year, and I'm riding it.
You're sticking with it.
Yeah. So, there's literally no reason why I'm doing it.
So
I have no expert opinion on. I mean, I've already given you some insight on what, like, Gonzaga Duke could look like, but I have no expert opinion on who could win that game.
Okay, so your Final Four is
Kentucky, Arizona, Virginia, Gonzaga.
Championship game.
Kentucky and Virginia.
And your winner?
Kentucky.
If you were going to pick one team to beat Kentucky in this entire bracket, who would it be and why?
Okay, so you're asking kind of different questions, I think, here. So if I could pick, I think that Wisconsin would have the best chance to beat Kentucky out of any team in the field. But I have Wisconsin losing to Arizona.
No, that's fine. The way you answered it the first time was the question I was asking.
Okay, so yeah, I would say Wisconsin. I think Wisconsin would be able to pull guys out of the paint with the swing offense and with Kaminsky. Kaminsky would pull probably, I don't know what they would do defensively, honestly, against Wisconsin. Because do you play your best defensive player on Kaminsky and then just let Decker go nuts against Towns?
I think I would put Towns on Kaminsky.
But he's not as comfortable on the perimeter. Like Towns, I feel fairly confident Towns would get in a lot of foul trouble on Kaminsky.
That's a good point. No, that's a really, really good point.
Like, it's just a really, it's a weird matchup for them. Like, there's no such thing as a bad matchup for Kentucky, because Kentucky would roll them on offense. Like, there's no way that Koenig, and even though Gosser's a good defender, I don't think that he can guard the 6'6" Harrison twins. So, it would be a tough game. Like, I think that Kentucky would be like a 4-point favorite, maybe, and I might bet money line on Wisconsin.
What would your money line be in that situation?
Be like maybe 170, something like that.
Yeah, I kind of like that play also.
Like, I don't think that Wisconsin would win, but I would take my chances.
Yeah, you're just playing the odds.
Yeah. So, yeah, I would take Kentucky to win it all. I think that Arizona is playing really well. And they're the de facto – here's the thing. Arizona's the de facto one seed in the West because the game is in Los Angeles. So they're the one seed.
And those,
like, they're going to get home court advantage, basically.
Yeah, those people are going to travel. They're going to be there.
Yeah, no, it's basically a home game for Arizona in the West. So they're, to me, they're the de facto one seed.
Anything else from that we've left out over these – nearing 2 hours that you would like to add? Anything you'd like to plug? What do you got?
Oh, I wrote. If I wanted to plug everything I've written over the last, like, 2 days, we'd be here for another half hour, probably. So, just go to CBS Sports. You'll see my name in places. I don't know. I think it's going to be Kentucky. I think they're going to go 40-0. Virginia, I'm going out on a limb with them and riding Tony Bennett's defense and his offensive efficiency and hoping it works out. It's outside of Kentucky. I think this is a wide open bracket within the top 8.
Are you rooting for Kentucky to go 40-0?
I wouldn't mind it, I would say.
I would like to see it. I think I'm rooting for it.
I don't know that I'm rooting for it, but I would be okay with it.
I'm down with seeing history. I really like Calipari and how he handles the college situation with what goes on with these players. He's He's truly about what's best for the kids, and I really like that about him. So I can root for him to do well.
I totally agree with that as well. I'm totally on the same page. I love John Calipari. I think he's terrific. I wouldn't mind him having what would possibly be the best team ever at this point, just because of the way that he handles the one-and-done situation. He's straight up with kids. And this is probably the best coaching job we've seen in a long time on the college level. He convinced 9 McDonald's All-Americans that they should play 20 minutes a game.
This is, and people try and like discredit him. Oh, he's not that great of a coach. But, well, guess what? Recruiting is part of college basketball.
He's a terrific X's and O's coach. So who's ever saying that is stupid beyond stupid. Like, it is just so dumb to say that he's not a good X's and O's coach, because he's finding ways to get Carl Towns involved in the post. He's not going away from the dribble drive. Like, he's still using it with Andrew Harrison. He's just morphing it to where Harrison's getting into the paint more, just generally. So I think it's so stupid that people say he's not a good X's and O's coach.
You hear that, people who argued with me on Twitter about John Calipari? You're stupid.
Yes, people that, yeah, no, that's dumb.
All right, as Sam said, go check out all his stuff at cbssports.com in the Ion basketball section of the college basketball section. I said that horribly. Let's do that again. In the college basketball section on cbssports.com, click on the Ion basketball link, and then you can see all of Sam's stuff there. I think I did it better the second time, right?
Nailed it.
Okay, just wanted to make sure. I'm Brian Gibberman. That's Sam Cini. Oh, I didn't do picks because I don't do picks anymore.
Yeah, that's what I figured. I didn't even think to, like, I wanted to ask you, but you said that you don't fill out brackets or anything, so I was just like, all right, whatever.
Yeah, and all I told you this offline, but people at my job got all angry at me because I work in the sports department. They're like, what's wrong with you? What do you mean you don't fill out a bracket? I don't fill out a bracket. It's more, I find that I get too attached to my bracket, and I can't, like, enjoy it when I fill one out, so I now without it, I just kind of watch the tournament and I root for whatever the hell I want. So
yeah, like, it's like why I don't play fantasy football.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So, like, if Arizona is losing to a 15 seed and I had them going to the championship game, say, I would get, like, all worked up and upset. Now I'll just root for them to lose to the 15 seed. It'd be cool to see. And I think that's a way more fun way to take in the tournament.
Yeah, that's probably right.
So that's my little rambling about why I don't fill out a bracket. Ben, anything else you want to add? You got anything else?
Hampton coach Edward Joyner on possibly playing Kentucky. You've got to hope that you've got Jesus on speed dial.
All right.
I think that basically sums up March Madness this year.
Yeah, I think that's a perfect way to end our March Madness preview. I'm Brian Gibberman. He's Sam Vecini from CBSSports.com. And that is the March Madness preview of the Amateur Hour podcast.